This is the Definitely Uncertain podcast, brought to you by Goldwalk Capital. Each week, we look at how high net worth families can improve their lives, decisions, and investments in a deeply uncertain world. We always aim to provide practical information, even if we can't offer specific investment advice. This is the Definitely Uncertain podcast, and my name is Darren Rockman, and I'm a partner at Goldrock, the more than 20-year-old multifamily office servicing high net worth families in Israel and around the world. And this week on the podcast, we welcome back Professor Avi Weiss. Hi, Avi.
Hi, Darren. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. For those who don't recall, Avi is the president of the Taub Center for Social Policy Studies in Israel. He has a doctoral degree in economics from the University of Chicago, and he's presided as a member of the senior faculty at Bar-Ilan University since 1988. He is an expert in applied economics and focuses on industrial organization and antitrust and labor and law and all types of other really important things. But what Avi really does is that he advises senior policymakers and government and politicians about what to do, and he does that here in Israel. And so now, in this new post-October 7th world, we thought we'd ask Avi back onto the podcast for the third time to give us a little bit of insight as to the impact that the war and the ongoing turmoil is having on Israel's economy, and what can we expect for the future. So thanks, Avi, for being willing to join us.
Always a pleasure, Darren.
Okay. So let's take big picture. How has the conflict since October 7th impacted Israel's economy?
That's a very wide question. And of course, the impact has been incredibly great. The first most important thing I think you have to think about when you ask about what's been the impact is take a look at the large macro picture. So when you take a look at the large macro picture, you can see that growth obviously fell very, very significantly in Israel. The Israeli economy was expected last year in 2023 to grow at about 3.5%, and GDP I'm talking about. And in the end, it grew by only about 2%. Now, to go from 3.5% to 2% in one quarter means that you had a negative growth in the fourth quarter of about 4%, so about a drop of 4%. That's a very, very large drop. You haven't seen anything like that in a very long time. You'd have to go probably back to the Yom Kippur War for anything to go along those lines, or to the Second Intifada. So that was a very, very large macro effect. The effect of that, and of course, the government is having to spend an incredible amount of money on defense. And the military costs themselves obviously put Israel in a very, very difficult situation. So you have a situation where you're going to be spending, all told, somewhere probably in the vicinity of 250 billion shekel, which is way over 10%, not quite 20%, but over 15% of the Israeli annual GDP. And what that means is that you're going to have to finance it from someplace. It means you're going to be taking loans. It means you're going to be having to increase taxes. It means you're going to have to take all kinds of steps in order to be able to afford that. And what's going to happen is that your deficit is going to go way up. And that's obviously something that's problematic for the country in the long run. Your debt to GDP ratio is going to go up. A lot of different things that are happening are fairly negative from that perspective. So that's just from a macro view. If you want to zoom in a little bit more and look, let's say, at labor markets, well, we all know what happened in October and November with respect to the large number of people who weren't able to work. About 20% of people weren't able to work for all kinds of reasons. Some of them, of course, were reservists inside the army. Others weren't able to work because their kids didn't have schooling and therefore they had to stay home with them. Others lost their positions because of all kinds of businesses that closed down. Yeah. So there were a lot of different things that were causing a lot of unemployment. That's gotten much, much, much better, of course, over time. And that's no longer a very big issue. But the one population, of course, where you do still see the large effect are Arab Israelis. And Arab Israelis, of course, many of them were very afraid to go back to work. That's getting better over time and significantly better. But that was certainly the case. And that obviously has large effects on the Israeli economy.
Right. So you started to talk about what happened straight after October. How has the first 2 months of this year, January, February, how have we seen things improve? You mentioned the improvement in the employment situation as reservists were released from reserve duty, people were able to go back to work in large numbers. What other changes or differences between this year and what we saw in the last quarter?
Well, as you said, Darren, it's very, very clear that the labor market has improved, and that's very, very significant. However, we do have other effects that have happened. For instance, the fact that Moody cut our credit rating, that of course has an effect on the interest rates at which Israel borrows, and this is a point where Israel needs to borrow significantly. It's not surprising that that happened, but that's something that obviously has a cost to the Israeli economy. The other things that's happened, of course, is with respect to changes in the budget, and I suggest we talk about some more about what's happened there, but certainly not what you might have ideally expected to have happened.
Okay, well let's focus first on Moody's because that was a headline matter here and somewhat controversial as well. Some of the political responses, we won't go into that because we're not going to talk politics. What is the impact? What is the cost of that to the Israeli economy? And do you think this is a long-term issue or a short-term issue?
Okay, so people who were shocked shouldn't have been. It's not really a very surprising move by Moody's. Think about who Moody's has to represent. They're basically speaking to investors, and they're trying to give information to investors with respect to risk. Now, the risk for the Israeli economy has gone up significantly. This d didn't just start with the war. Unfortunately, this started well before with respect to the entire political reform that was going on in the legal system. That did have implications. And while Moody's didn't make any moves there were warnings that you were hearing and things that you were hearing about what might happen going forward. Of course, all that died completely at the beginning of October. That became irrelevant. But suddenly, the types of risk that the Israeli economy was facing were a completely different type of risk. And Moody's now has to tell the investors, is this riskier than it was in the past? Do we still rate Israel at the same level as you rate some of those other countries that you're rating really doing really, really well, or is there a significant risk here? Now, Israel was at war, of course, in Gaza, and that is one issue that was not necessarily seen as being incredibly risky, but it was also in a lot of problems with the North and with Hezbollah. And if Israel got into a war, God forbid, with Hezbollah, the implications will be much wider, much greater. So even if there's a relatively low probability of that happening, the risk to the country fiscally, all told, has gone up very, very significantly. So therefore, it is not surprising that this is what happened. With respect to what its implications are, obviously, it costs you a lot to have that happen. And it's going to cost a lot in interest payments. And when you spend more on interest payments, you have a lot less to spend on the other things that you want to spend them on,
Right.
which is everything across the board. We know that there are wide cuts having to happen in many, many, many different areas. And those are partially necessary. The size of them is affected by the fact that you're going to have to pay more on your loans. So yes, it has a significant implications, significant effect across the board. Inside of Israel. And is it short term or is it long term? We don't really know the answer to that yet, but what's generally happened when countries have had their credit rating lowered and then it's been raised again, it wasn't raised again immediately. It took a long time until the country was deemed safe enough for things to be raised again. Now, if the war suddenly ended, or if the hostages, God willing, are returned home, and the war with the Hamas finishes, and as a result of that, the war with Hezbollah basically is stopped. In that type of situation, in the rosy type of situation, then things might be able to return quickly because the Israeli economy would be viewed as returning to where it was previously. Israel has a record of being able to overcome such difficulties very, very, very quickly.
Right. The other thing you were touched on was the budget question. So what changes have been made to the budget? It was something that Moody's mentioned in their statement. And are the cuts that have been made deep enough in order to meet some of the huge costs that, 250 billion shekels that you're talking about associated with the war?
Well, look, what Moody's was discussing was, and what everybody was discussing, was that there were certain moves that needed to be made in order to be able to face the situation in the most reasonable way that you can. Now, this includes cuts to pretty much everything that is not essential for the war effort or essential for growth of the country. Basically, shutting down all kinds of ministries were discussed. And the coalition agreements, and a lot of the money for the coalition agreements was some money that could have been used for other types of things. What happened in actuality was that cuts were made and deep cuts were made, but they weren't necessarily made to the right places. So those ministries were not cut, and that's very, very significant. And the money to the coalition was cut, but it was cut by a lot less than it could have been and than expected. And it seems like much of the coalition money, which is, of course, going for the most part to the Haredi populations, is something which is not supportive of growth in particular because of the education system there. And as a result of that, the money is being spent on things that were not necessarily necessary at this point in time, at least from an economic perspective. So
When you,
that's a real issue.
right, and when you say
The
that,
other part, by the way, Darren, let me just mention is that one thing that started being done, and now I'm not sure where it stands, is that taxes are being increased, and especially value-added tax, and that's something that's very important. That's supposed to be increased as of 2025.
right, and when you say that money was cut from the wrong places, can you give us an example of the type of cut that happened that perhaps shouldn't have happened?
Oh, well, you're seeing that. Well, you're seeing it in education that you're seeing a lot of that. You're seeing it in certain types of infrastructure expenditures. You're seeing it in the medical system, in hospitals, expansions of hospital systems that were desperately needed and are not happening. Mental health. There are all kinds of places where the money is really, really needed, and for now. And those are things that are being cut along with everything else, and welfare payments, of course.
Okay. I want to talk
By the
about.
way, Darren, let me actually mention one more thing.
Sure.
The expenditure, the, one of the important, one of the most important expenditures that a country can ever have is the investment it makes in its young children. Early childhood investments are known to be probably the most lucrative, most important investments that you can make in any economy, because that's really the future. And the cuts that are being made in the expenditure for early childhood are things we're going to feel for generations to come.
Right. Okay. I want to talk about three sectors in the economy that probably have been impacted more than anything else. One, the building and construction sector. The second, the high-tech sector. And third, travel and tourism. And particularly when it comes to the tech sector, which is such a driver of Israel's economy, I'd like to understand from you how much damage has been done. And in your mind, do we bounce back from this once, the war is over and hopefully life returns to some type of more normal state?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's an important question. Look, there's been a large cut in investments in high tech in Israel, but that's happened worldwide in high tech. So what we got used to was 2021, 2022, the investments in high tech worldwide were off the charts.
The party was
Until that
on.
point, what?
The party was on.
The party was on, absolutely. It was unbelievable how much was being spent. If you take a look at expenditures, you're going to see that there's this graph going straight across, and all of a sudden, this huge spike in 2021, 2022, and then it started coming back down. In 2023, it came back down very, very significantly worldwide. But when it worldwide, it came down by somewhere around 50%, which is huge, half of what it was, and Israel came down by more, came down by about 70%. Now, that's also because so much is spent in Israel on new companies, but also because of the entire reform that was going on beforehand, before this war, years ago, before this war started. It just feels like it's years ago. And so just to say that the high tech has fallen, that's true. It's a worldwide phenomenon. However, when you take a look at what's happened in Israel over the past, 5 months or so, you can see that there has been a decrease, especially in investments in seeding and pre-seeding. In other words, looking at those very, very, very early ideas that there are so many in Israel over so many years, those are the ones who are having a much more difficult time finding investments, finding people, finding angels to be, invest in them. While the, excuse me, the more established companies have not been really having any kinds of problems, and they've been expanding as usual. They haven't ha we haven't seen a very, very large shrinking there. Now, what does that mean for the long run? Well, we don't know exactly how people are going to react. There are people who got used to investing in Israel and may now say, I found other places to put my money, so there's no need for me to necessarily invest in Israel. But on the other hand, we have a lot of really good people, a lot of good human capital, and a lot of it comes out of our army, out of places like the A200 unit, and that's just becoming perhaps even stronger now. And of course, part of the high tech is also military, and the military companies are clearly doing very well and will continue to do very well because you have proven product. So therefore, it's going to go in different directions. We don't know yet, but the hope is that it will recover if and when this is over.
Yeah, it feels to me, and I'm showing my age here, a little like the way Israel felt in 2002, 2003, after the dot-com bust, and yeah, that coincided also with the Intifada, and there was just this hollowing out of the industry. But I think the difference this time, and you've sort of pointed to it. Is that the roots of the industry are so much deeper, the human capital, the infrastructure, and the number of companies here is just so much greater than it was back 20 odd years ago.
That's right. And first of all, if what you mean by showing your age, you mean that you're young, I think that's absolutely true. And 2002, 2003 was one issue, of course, but it coincided, as you said, with the Second Intifada, and therefore it's very, very mixed messages there. But you take a look at the 2007, 2008 break that happened, and Israel was barely affected by that at all. And it's always been very good at overcoming any kinds of situations.
Let's just switch to one other part of this puzzle, which is the shekel. We saw a devaluation of the shekel as after October 7th, and then we saw as the war moved into an active phase, sort of 3 weeks later, Bank of Israel intervened and stabilized the shekel back to within the range where it has typically traded for most of the past, decade or so. What do you see the outlook going forward? Do you see the Bank of Israel having to continue intervening? Does it have the firepower to do so? And I'm not asking you to project. You're shrugging as if to say, "Hey, what do I know?" Because nobody knows anything about currencies. But given what's happened, I think the real question is whether or not Israel and the Bank of Israel specifically has the ability to keep defending the shekel going forward.
All right, so let's think about what's happening. First of all, I forgot my crystal ball and my other suit, so I'm not going to have that with me right now. But looking at what happened, obviously the war and the dangers to Israel weakened the shekel very, very significantly. And therefore, as a result of that, the exchange rate with the dollar, with the euro, with whatever currency you want, went way up because of the weakening of the shekel. That was fairly obvious that that was going to happen. And the risk of having a war with the Hezbollah would have sent that even higher. Had that actually happened, then we wouldn't have ended at only 4.07, we were 4.08. We would have gone up significantly more than that. Now, what happened is there was a combination of three different things that happened that lowered it back down to where now it is. It's the same rate, or actually a little bit lower even than it was before this war started. And that was first of all the intervention of the Bank of Israel, like you mentioned. The other was Nasrallah's speech, in which he said, excuse me, in which he basically said that the Hezbollah is not entering this war as a war, at least for now, and therefore that also calmed things down very significantly. And the third is the strengthening of the U.S. stock market. The increase of the S&P has had a very significant effect. Now, that's something you see going over years. For a very long time now, you've seen an almost one-to-one relationship between the S&P and the strength of the shekel. As the S&P went up, you had the shekel strengthening. This has been happening for a long time. It's a bit of a puzzle why it happens, but it probably has to do with investment strategies by Israeli large Israeli investors, and that probably has a very large effect. So what's been happening now with the strengthening of the shekel again is to a large extent the effect of the S&P,
Right.
and as we know, it has been doing very, very well.
And
Derek,
back,
did you want to ask something?
yeah, and back to the Bank of Israel. Should there be another round of should the war once again enter into sort of an active phase or a more active phase? Should we end up having to fight something more significant in the north? What position is the Bank of Israel in?
Yeah, I think the Bank of Israel still had they didn't do a lot of selling of dollars. They I think that they do have the strength to be able to have a large effect and keep it getting out of hand. Unless, of course, this turns into a full-fledged war with the Hezbollah, in which case all bets are off. Because that's going to be a completely different scenario from anything that we've seen right now, and the ability to fight the effects of that is going to be unbelievably high. So as long as we keep it in some type of a reasonable realm, I think the Bank of Israel would be able to combat any kinds of effects. But right now, it just simply does not need to.
Right. Okay. And then when you think about investors and Israeli investors, foreign investors in Israel, what are some of the let's look at the positive side. What are some of the opportunities that this has been that this war and this situation is creating? Or is it all doom and gloom?
No, well, I mean, obviously, anything defense related, weapons related is going to succeed very, very significantly. So that's one place you can certainly look to, anything dealing with that. I think that with respect to right now, we're still in the doom and gloom type of situation,
Right.
but I think it's short-lived. I think the Israeli economy is going to recover. I think it's going to recover nicely and strongly. It's going to take, it might take a little while. You'd really need to make sure things are settled down. The question, what happens politically after this war is over, is also going to be a very important effect. It's going to have it could have potentially a large effect. It's going to be an important factor. And if there are new elections, will be different than if there are not new elections. So there's a lot of uncertainty. That uncertainty, of course, is not something that markets tend to like very much. And that's why you have a place like Moody's cutting your credit rating and others that might do the same. But I think if Israel is as resilient as it has been in the past, then I think we're going to overcome that pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I think that that's probably the bottom line message, which is the history has always been Israel has come out of crises stronger and with real strength in GDP growth and across all sectors, really.
That's right. And I think what's interesting about you mentioning that is that, when the initial forecasts were put out by the Bank of Israel and by S&P and other bodies also, you basically saw differences in how much they thought the GDP was going to grow, how much they thought the country would be harmed. And the Bank of Israel was much more optimistic or much less pessimistic than, for instance, S&P was. And the reason that they were so much more optimistic was because of the history of Israel's recovery. Now, in the end, when you take a look at those predictions that were made for 2023, and you compare which one actually happened, the Bank of Israel's prediction is the one that actually was closest to hitting the actual number,
Right.
while the S&P was overly
Cautious.
was not optimistic enough.
Yeah, interesting. All right. Well, it's going to give you a lot of work to do as an advisor to all the people that have to make the decisions, and hopefully they'll make good ones. And we'll maybe have you back on in a few months' time, and hopefully things will be looking up by then for the country, for the region, of course, for the hostages, and we We pray for them, and we'll just say thank you for coming onto the podcast.
My pleasure, Darren, and let's do it in better times.
Amen. Amen to that. Okay. Professor Avi Weiss from the Taub Center, thank you very, very much. And all of you, thank you for listening. And we look forward to bringing you more podcasts in the very near future. Bye-bye.